Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. Here we are, Scott. Episode number 59. It's the episode before episode 60.
Yes, it is.
I need more sleep.
I haven't had enough coffee for this one yet. So what are we talking about today?
So today we are going to dive back into the world of Azure and talk about Azure Network Security. So they just continue to innovate, to grow, to expand, all of this stuff you can do with IaaS and Azure. So you've been working on some stuff for this. We have, if you're in Jacksonville and you listen, we have the Global Azure Bootcamp coming up next week. If you're not Jacksonville, you still have the Global Azure Bootcamp coming up next week, all over the world. So this is something, if you guys are into Azure, definitely see if there's one relatively close to you and go check it out. If you are in Jacksonville, you'll be able to hear us talk about this, or probably more specifically Scott talk about this, for a whole hour at the Global Azure Bootcamp camp in Jacksonville, where you and I both are.
A whole hour, huh? It's going to be pretty loaded, but yeah.
Well, I actually gave you 70 minutes. You got more than an hour. You have to talk a little longer.
Excellent. It'll happen. It'll be okay. Well, yeah, so I think this will be a fun one to talk about. It's always in front of everybody's mind, right? When we talk about trust of public cloud and being able to go into somebody else's data center, because that's all really all this is, right? My prem, your prem, their prem, is how are these things secured? A, by my provider, and then B, what can I do to have additional controls and constructs in place? Potentially even mirroring the way I do things on premises today or within my existing data centers today.
Exactly. I know I've talked to people too before about it, and everybody's like, well, it's on, I mean, you don't know where your server is, where your VM is, what other network traffic could potentially be going over the same physical network as yours, what's going out to the internet versus what's staying just within Microsoft's data center, their network. So when you do get to IaaS, when you get to network security in the cloud, there's a lot to think about. And I think this even goes back to people that typically did on-prem infrastructure. They're like, well, what am I going to do in the cloud? Well, there is a whole bunch of network security stuff that you still have to think about in the cloud. So we're going to dive into that. It's a different way of thinking about it. It's all the software-defined networking. It's not necessarily making sure you have cables running to the right switches and the firewalls in the right spot and all of that. From that physical level, it's a lot more, again, that software level. So where do you want to start with it?
I think the best place to start, and where everyone will get their most bang for their buck, is diving into what Microsoft calls the virtual data center, or the Azure virtual data center, also known as the VDC. Lowercase v and then capital D, capital C, you know, for virtual data center. And what VDC is it is a combination of guidance, approach, configuration, logical and physical architectures to be able to understand how to make the most of Microsoft's cloud computing platform in Azure and be able to respect your existing security and network policies, right? So lots of organizations, if you are, you know, on premises today, you probably have a firewall at your edge. So you can still do the same thing in Azure. Like, that's not that hard, and it's been doable for a while now, but they're getting a lot better about publishing the guidance out there. But then also taking it a step further and saying, hey, there are other things that you might want to consider that you don't have access to in your on-premises data center that could actually make you more secure in the cloud. So let's think about something like identity as a firewall, right? Rather than having a physical device or a virtual device or whatever it is, let's use our identity plane and role-based access control and network security groups and all these other things in combination to present a holistic solution where we can host our workloads in Microsoft's platform. And like I said, generally speaking, you can probably be more secure up there than you're going to be with the little toaster fridge sitting under your desk, right? That runs your human resources system or whatever else it happens to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So yeah, I would encourage everyone to get into VDC and particularly take a dive into the big pillars of that. So identity and directory services is kind of the first one, right? We need to decide once we have a subscription up, how do we get users in? What are we going to do for role-based access control to Azure resources? How is that all going to be managed? And where's that identity come from? So identity is a big one, right? Identity is the new firewall. Then you're going to have your actual security infrastructure, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the components there, but what do we do from that software-defined networking side of things? How do we layer in network security groups? Do we need network virtual appliances and firewalls? What types of protections do we need? Are we doing like OSI layer 4, layer 7? Where are we sitting, and what's the workload we're hosting and what goes on there? We'll also dive into, as part of VDC, connectivity, and generally speaking, probably some form of hybrid connectivity. So let's consider internet egress, internet ingress, and then ingress from our on-premises environments, and then egress as a whole from our network, right, hosted within Azure. And then what does that connectivity look like when it comes to cloud services and being able to connect to them? And when I say cloud services, I mean platform as a service offerings. So something that is hosted in the public cloud that generally speaking has an internet endpoint associated with it, Azure SQL, Azure Web Apps, things like that. How can we keep that traffic from passing over the public internet? How can we potentially do inspection? What does that look like, and how does it all come into play? So you kind of take those four big pillars and you stand them up and you just build walls around it, and all of a sudden you have a house or you have a virtual data center, and it all kind of comes in and works itself together from there.
You have lots of options. I was just looking through this virtual data center link that we'll have in the show notes, and all the different, there's a bunch of different diagrams around the hierarchies, talking about, like you said, that Azure site-to-site VPN or express route to kind of create that hybrid network between your on-prem environment and your cloud environment. They really have, I haven't looked at this in a while, and they have really improved, expanded this documentation to really show you kind of all those different scenarios you may encounter, different ways you can configure them, set all of that up to make sure you do have a nice and secure environment.
Yeah, they've done a really good job with this documentation. It is excellent stuff, and I wish more people would take a look at it because it really satisfies a lot of the hesitations that information security professionals have, networking professionals, and everyone else who kind of sits in and approaches public cloud. So yeah, you've got to do some tweaking and turn some things on and do some configuration, potentially spend a little bit more money, right? Because, you know, running compute costs a little bit, but you can go pretty deep and pretty far with it. So let's take a dive into a couple of common components of Azure Network Security. And let's start with NSGs. So NSGs are network security groups. They can be used for both layer 3 and layer 4 filtering. So we're talking like OSI layers there, right? And being able to push things through. One thing that happens when I talk to folks a lot is they come and they say, hey, there's this NSG thing, but an NSG isn't a firewall. And that is true. NSGs are not firewalls. You will see some people say that NSGs are firewalls. I'm not one of them. NSGs are not. They allow for inbound and outbound filtering for TCP and UDP traffic. And they're kind of stateful, but not really. So they're never going to replace your Palo Alto or your Checkpoint or, you know, whatever firewall you have on premises. That's not what they're meant to do. They're meant to be a nice security layer for you. They're built into the platform. They're free. They don't cost you anything. And what they do is that lets me do a multi-layered control plane for all that inbound and outbound IP filtering, like IP whitelisting and blacklisting, or even service level, right? So I can say within an NSG, here's a service tag that says, I have an any rule inbound for traffic within my virtual network. So, you know, there's a tag that says, hey, VNet. And what that does is any of the subnets that I apply that rule to, now they can just all automatically talk to each other over any port, any protocol, because I've said any within the VNet is trusted. I could also close that down, right? I could do a deny instead of an allow rule and be able to push things back and forth that way. And now what I can start to do is I can start to use those tags to go ahead and layer in with my individual rules and be able to actually control ingress and egress for things, not just between subnets, but also between networks, whether that's a peered VNet or an on-premises network, right? I have some type of hybrid connectivity with a site-to-site VPN or ExpressRoute or whatever it happens to be. So now that I can do that filtering, well, what if I could also do forced routing? If I combine something like forced tunneling, say I do express route and I've got a forced tunnel, I can also do user-defined routes, which supersede your system routes that are coming out of Azure. And now I can actually start to do next hop routing. So I can say with a three-tier application, a web tier and an application tier and a data tier, that inbound on the web app, port 443 is allowed inbound from the internet, and that's it. And now when the web tier goes and talks to the application tier, those are the only two tiers that can talk to each other because they'll be locked down by an NSG, and they can only talk over these ports and protocols potentially. And then we would do the same thing at the database level. And then we would put routing in place between all three of them to say, hey, web tier, when you go to talk to this thing, you only go this way. And here's your next hop, next hop, next hop, next hop, and go ahead and build things through that way. So you can build really rich, really complex networks this way. You can go pretty deep with hubs and spokes. And generally speaking, you know, you have all the control that you would want, even all the way up to saying like, hey, if we do certain types of like site-to-site VPNs now, you can upgrade to SKUs that let you do BGP routing without having to step into ExpressRoute and things like that.
Got it. Wow. So they've really expanded these NSGs to give you a lot of flexibility, even though, like you said, they're not firewalls. They don't provide some of that advanced functionality that you'll get out of a firewall. It's a lot more than just, hey, here's something to block certain ports in front of a certain server or in front of one of those virtual networks.
They've come really far. And so what they've started to do is NSGs initially came out and they were, and I think today a lot of people still view them this way too, as allowing for that filtering at either a subnet or at a individual network interface level, right? So I have a decision as a consumer of Azure of which level or control plane do I apply this at? Is it applicable at a subnet? Is it applicable at a NIC? Is it applicable at both? And what does that look like? And that can get a little bit messy, right? Because now I have a lot of resources to manage and individual rules and things like that. So what they did was they added a feature that they call ASGs, Application Security Groups. And that lets you do user-defined virtual machine groups for NSG rules. So now rather than saying, I have an NSG that's applied to my subnet, and potentially I would have had to keep servers out of that subnet because they didn't apply to the rule. Like maybe I mixed like web servers and app servers in the same subnet. Now what you can do is you can actually mix them in the same subnet, and then you can create an ASG, which is that application security group, which goes ahead and now I apply certain servers and NICs to that ASG, and then the NSGs filter in automatically. So then I can get a whole nother layer of abstraction, and I can group all my web servers together because they're just web servers, and now I don't need to care about which network segment they're hosted in because the ASG is automatically going to apply network security group rules at the NIC level for me without me having to worry about anything. And then if I need to change it, like, you know, I started out and I had my web servers had an ASG with port 80 and port 443 on them. And then finally I got my act together and I said, okay, everything's SSL only now. Rather than having to go edit who knows how many NSGs and go ahead and change them all, now I can edit just that one ASG and it'll automatically filter down to all those resources.
Very cool. We need like a list of all the three-letter acronyms and what each one of them do in our show notes.
There's just a couple of them. Yeah, I'll make sure that I put the full names, and I'll try and put things in parentheses next to them and everything else, because it is very acronym heavy and acronym soup, right? Once you do get into this. So far we've got, we've got VDC, we've got NSG, we've got ASG, and then we've got augmented NSGs, and now we'll get into some other ones as well.
Yeah. Can I make up one? Can we talk about ALBs now? I've never actually heard them called ALBs, but how about Azure Load Balancers? Kind of going down from that security level. You talked about, hey, this is how we can secure at the, like in that three-tiered application where you're talking about where you have your web servers, your application servers, your data servers. Now I want to expand that out across a bunch of web servers. I know typically, again, on-prem, it's buy a load balancer, a hardware device, or use like the Windows load balancing. Now in Azure, we actually have an Azure load balancer that we can use to, again, just balance out the traffic. It's no different than the on-prem load balancer, except now it's all software. It sits up in Azure. Let's talk a little bit about that Azure load balancer.
The first thing that you're going to want to think about when you start saying, I have a highly available load, whether it's like web or application servers or database servers, whatever it happens to be, is what type of load balancer you need. So typically, web servers and application servers are going to have different needs than database servers, particularly when it comes to that OSI control and what we want to put in place, right? So there is the Azure load balancer, which comes in both an internal and an external flavor. External being I can make it externally facing from my VNet, say from like the internet. Internal being it's just internal to my VNet, and then I can enable things like DSR, like direct server return, you know, say for like an always-on availability group for a SQL cluster. So first and foremost, what am I protecting or what am I load balancing? And then that'll kind of drive us into a control plane. So if it's just layer four we need, then cool. We go with Azure Load Balancer and we're all set and ready to go. Azure Load Balancer, you know, works in some certain ways and does some certain things. So I might have to manage like inbound, outbound NAT and a couple other things to think about. What I can also do is there's an offering at the layer 7 level. So now we're talking like application protection, right? And this would be great for a web server where we have the application gateway or the WAG. And then potentially or optionally, we can also turn on a web application firewall or a WAF and have that sitting in front of things like our web servers. So that'll provide not only load balancing, it will also provide some of those additional security constructs and controls. So if I enable the application firewall, the web application firewall on top of the application gateway, now I can start to do things like filtering for OWASP top 10, right? So let me go ahead and see, are there like SQL injection attacks coming through that I just need to shut down automatically on the edge based on that software-defined load balancing construct? Yeah. So biggest thing, really, there's kind of a couple different flavors of load balancer. The Azure load balancer with internal or external. There's the WAG, the application gateway, which optionally has the WAF. And then if you want to do DNS load balancing, there's also this thing called Traffic Manager. So you can get pretty complex, and then you can layer all those together if you want to as well.
Got it. Very nifty. And then if you want to even bring in another one, there is support, I believe, for even some third-party firewalls where if you want to bring your own key, bring your own license, you can even stand up some of those third-party software firewalls?
Absolutely. So there are hundreds, if not thousands, of network virtual appliances or NVAs that are available within the Azure marketplace for customers to deploy. So that is everything from, and the reason I say network virtual appliance, because it's not just firewalls, it's load balancers, it's all sorts of other things. So say I wanted to deploy a Palo Alto firewall, and then I wanted to not use Azure's load balancing solution, but I wanted to deploy like a Kemp load balancer. Well, now I can go ahead and do that because they're just virtual appliances. So they are running on compute. So they consume CPU, RAM, storage. They're just VMs, right? But they're managed out of those marketplace images and available for customers to consume. NVAs do have a couple of considerations for them. So one is how much throughput do I actually need to push through those? So if we think about a firewall that sits in a DMZ or an edge zone within Azure, typically what we're doing is we're doing some type of routing and forced ingress and egress to make sure that all the traffic is passing through that device, right? Like I want all my outbound traffic from Azure to go ahead and pass through this firewall and maybe do some type of inspection, right? Like IPS or IDS or something like that. So we need to know how much traffic we're going to push through because there are limits to the amount of network bandwidth that we can push through individual network interfaces within Azure and virtual machines. And sometimes you might even be gated by the marketplace image, like the vendor for a particular NVA might not offer an appliance that has accelerated networking or anything like that in it, because it's just going to cost you a bunch of money. So how much do I need? And then we've also got to think about things like high availability. Usually if you have a firewall on premises, you generally have two of them at least, right? So that you can do failover, one goes bad, things like that. Same thing in Azure. We still have to have two of them. So now I've doubled my compute cost, I've doubled my licensing, all those other things. And now if my throughput is really high on the like a combination of inbound and outbound, potentially what I might need to do is actually split my ingress and egress. So it's very easy to have NVAs run away because you'll start out with what you think is, oh, I just need one of those. And then one turns into two and then two turns into four. And then that's only within a virtual network and a network segment. What if I have, you know, workloads running in two Azure regions, right? I'm doing US East and US West. Well, if I ended up with four NVAs in US East, I'm probably going to end up with four more in US West. So now all of a sudden I went from one to eight very quickly.
Yeah, definitely something to be aware of. We've talked about all these different applications, these different components of Azure to help secure your network. You can get them all in place. You can prevent these different security vulnerabilities. How do you actually then go in and audit, monitor, look at logs? I'm assuming all of that's available for all of these, so you actually know, hey, somebody is trying to, whether it's stage a denial of service attack against me or someone is trying to send some SQL injection queries. What's out there from that perspective so you can actually be aware of people trying to compromise the security of your Azure network?
It depends on what you deploy and what resource you deploy. So everything logs in a little bit of a different way. In general, most logs have the ability to write to things like a storage account or optionally log analytics. So we've talked a little bit about log analytics in the past. I actually think anything that supports log analytics, you should probably just log it into there and have everything flow through, because that's going to help us with doing downstream integrations with things like existing SIEMs or service management systems, like help desk ticketing systems like ServiceNow, things like that. So from an audit perspective and from a monitoring and metrics side of things, definitely deploy network security groups, and you will have access to NSG flow logs, which you can optionally write to storage or, like I said, log analytics, probably the preferable place, because then we can do some nice visualizations and some other things on top of them. And any of those data plane logs, data plane analytics, we'll go ahead and write those out. There's a DDoS service, which also has metrics and logs. There is the Web Application Firewall and the WAG, those have logs as well. And so now what we do is we push all those logs out, we aggregate them in one place, and then we'll put our visualizations and dashboards and things together on top of that, and potentially any other alerting or monitoring that we need. So we would go ahead, and now that we've got all the logs out there and we know what's in there and what we want to monitor, we would go into Azure Monitor, configure an alert that potentially combines one or more metrics and a couple of application groups or kind of alert groups and have things pushed through that way. So what I can do is I can have an NSG and I can actually have it monitored and automatically alert me when I see a lot of failures for data plane flows. Like maybe somebody installed a new piece of software on there and it really needs to be able to talk between the layers, but we had it locked down so much that now we need to go open a new port protocol, things like that. We can also go ahead and leverage log analytics in that service to do things like SIEM integrations. So integrating with our security and event management systems to think like Splunk, right? To be able to go ahead and have all that data written back to some other place where I might be reporting on it already.
All right. And then if you want to even do some nice fancy dashboards too, because you are in log analytics, you can always tie that stuff into Power BI and create Power BI dashboards around some of your networking, some of that logging too. So again, lots of options as you tie all those different Azure services together to help with that.
Yeah, you can do Power BI, or if you're not a Power BI subscriber or that's not your thing, you can also go ahead and create those dashboards as shareable dashboards inside of Azure itself. And then you can apply RBAC controls to those dashboards. So you have a ton of options for not only aggregating the data and putting it all together and having it in one place to report on, but from a visualization and analysis side of things, you have a lot of options there as well.
All right. Good to know. Going into, I guess, with Azure Security, we've talked about kind of that reporting, the monitoring, what you can implement. Anything else you want to talk about at that high-level network security overview?
I think there's probably two other things to touch on real quick. So I mentioned the integration with PaaS services. So generally speaking, a lot of organizations have a hesitation to say, hey, I've deployed a big IaaS workload, and now all of a sudden you're telling me because I use this thing called Azure Web Apps, my traffic needs to pass over the public internet. And that doesn't need to happen anymore. There are starting to be options both within your virtual networks, your VNets, and potentially within services themselves to be able to bring everything together and keep it on Microsoft's backbone. So there's this thing called VNet Service Endpoints. And what it does is when you go ahead and you turn this on, so it's available for a couple services like Azure SQL and Azure SQL Data Warehouse and storage as well. So what you do is you go into your VNet and you click a checkbox and you say, I want to deploy VNet service endpoints for one or more of these services. And Microsoft automatically augments your effective routes. And they play with your route tables a little bit. So they can ensure that all the traffic to that service is now hairpinned on their network and it never goes over the public internet. So if I'm on an application I wrote and it's a web app hosted in IaaS and it consumes, it talks to an Azure storage, in the past, it would have gone out over the public internet. It would have used my access key or some other API token and been able to get in. It's still going to use those API keys and tokens and things like that. But now if I deploy a VNet service endpoint, it adds an effective route directly to my NIC on my VM, and all that traffic always stays on Microsoft's network. It never goes out over the public internet. So that's pretty awesome.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's really good. But I can also take it a step further with some services, and I do have the ability to actually be able to deploy services down directly into my VNet itself. So if you think about having something like an Azure SQL database, maybe running in like a managed instance, well, now I can take that managed instance rather than running IaaS servers. I can actually go ahead and bring that service straight down onto my VNet. I can also do that with things like storage or Azure SQL with like service firewalls and things like that. So you can definitely mix, match, have your cake, eat it too, all those good things. You as a consumer of the platform do have to know that the option is out there and the checkbox is available, or you've got to run this script or do whatever, right? So it's on us as consumers to educate ourselves and be ready to go. But once you're educated, the functionality is definitely there.
I know that's been a concern people have had before that I've talked to, especially when you are starting to consume some of those PaaS services, is, well, now any communication with them is all over the internet. So bringing those in like that, keeping them all on Microsoft's network, or even adding them to your own VNet, super powerful, and definitely something that if you are concerned about that, you should go implement along with everything else we talked about today.
All the things. Just turn them all on.
Yes. Enable everything. And nobody will ever complain that they can't get to anything.
Absolutely.
Because you're not going to lock anybody out if you just go turn all that on without thinking about it.
No, never happened. So I think that's a pretty decent overview of all the stuff that's out there. So I will make sure that we have links to all of this, including the acronyms and everything else in our show notes. Everyone can find those at mscloudITpro.com/episode59. And yeah, I think that'll about do it for this one.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your week, the rest of your day, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.